Usually you tell a joke now, but...
Well, I already did that, and I'm really disappointed to say that I don't have any financial interest. So why is evidence essential to public health practice? If you're here, you know the answer to that, but it's quality information on what works. As somebody who is using taxpayer money, and of course I'm a taxpayer like all of you, I don't want to have any branch of government doing things that we don't know is going to make a difference. That's not a good value. That's not a good return, whether it's health or transportation or whatever, on investment. Evidence also provides a higher likelihood of successful programs and policies being implemented. There's a high opportunity cost of using non-evidence-based strategies. And I always tell folks in my department, some of whom are here, that there's one reason never to do something. One reason not to do something, if you're a health director, what do you think that is? The reason you never do it is because that's the way it's been done before. That's the worst reason to do something. You always want to ask, what is the best evidence? And in addition to those other benefits, it leads to greater workforce productivity, and it increases our accountability, and that's absolutely critical. So what are the key characteristics of evidence-based public health? Well, you want the best data. You want it to be from the best peer-reviewed evidence. That means both quantitative and qualitative. You want systematic approaches to looking at that data. You want to conduct sound evaluations, and you want to make sure that it's not under a bushel basket, that in fact dissemination, which is oftentimes our weakest part, becomes our strongest part. What's interesting to me is to find out after 16 years of having the community guide that it's still a secret for a lot of groups. And that's a shame, and that's on us and the folks that we work with in terms of the dissemination. So we are going to do a better job when that's already started. So here's the community guide. It is now congressionally mandated part of the Affordable Care Act. For recommendation on evidence-based interventions to improve public health. It works at the population level. There's a 15-member, independent, volunteer, hot task force that really works incredibly hard, has in-person meetings, has telephonic meetings, has a lot of email back and forth, working pretty much every day on task force issues. And the CDC does a spectacular job, currently under the excellent direction of Shauna Mercer, from whom you'll hear, of providing scientific support to us. That is really the staff that does the hard work that leads to us looking at that data to make evidence-based recommendations. And then there are liaisons with key organizations. That's one thing that really has become increasingly important. And liaisons, can you raise your hand? I see one. I see two, I see three. Okay, good. So, do you have buttons?
Yeah.
You have a button? Okay, I just want to make sure. Good. Okay, so those are the folks that basically take this and say, yeah, how does it work with my organization? Making sure they know about it. It is systematic reviews of available evidence leading to recommendations based on very standardized methods. And the methods, what people don't always understand is the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which does wonderful work on clinical interventions, but it's focused on the one-to-one between a healthcare provider and a patient, client, person, individual, whatever you want to call us. But that is a little different than what we do as the community guide, but the community guide is also very interested in the healthcare system. We're looking at things which can change policies, practice, systems at the healthcare system level. So we're very involved in what goes on in healthcare, as well as things that are in other sectors and that are outside the province of the healthcare world. So we make recommendations that are focused on policy and on practice. So they can be services, they can be programs, they can be policy. And of course, you all know in public health that some of the most important improvements we've made in public health are based on decisions to change policy. So that is an important focus. But one of the things we find is we identify a lot of research gaps, nowhere more than in looking at the evidence and what can reduce disparities. But even in the more general issues of what interventions work or don't work, there are a lot of times when out of our 218 to date recommendations, we found that there's insufficient evidence. that's not necessarily a reason not to do something, but if there's something that can accomplish the same goal that has good evidence, then you have to ask yourself, why would you be doing something that doesn't have that evidence? There are probably over 1,000 single and multi-component interventions we should evaluate. This is a full employment program for volunteers. And we've identified those and prioritized them to date based on those that can, based on the degree to which they can reduce the burden of illness and injury, based on the degree to which they can increase healthy behaviors and reduce unhealthy behaviors, like sitting and listening to too many presentations instead of exercising, increasing the implementation of effective interventions that are not widely used. In many cases, we have effective things, but they're not widely appreciated, and to phase out those that are used that are less cost-effective in favor of those that are more cost-effective, and then to also increase the interest among providers and decision-makers consistent with resource constraints. Now, I'm sure nobody in this room has resource constraints, so I could have. So one of the questions we're trying to answer, the first question is, does it work at any level? Does it work? Secondly, how well? What's the effect size? Third, for whom? Does it work for everybody? Does it work in rural and urban areas? Does it work for all populations, all age groups? Under what circumstances are these interventions appropriate? Not inconsequential. What do they cost? What do they cost? And do they provide value? What's the health return for the investment? Now, that's trickier when you get to some of the policy issues, but it's certainly an important thing to keep in mind. Now, what are the barriers to their use? There's reasons that things that we know work aren't in place everywhere all the time. What are the barriers? What's the difference? What's the differential? How do we overcome them? And what are harms? Not everything we recommend is an unmitigated good. Not everything we look at is an unmitigated good. We're interested in the net benefits. We're also interested in the distribution of benefits and harms. And then, are there any unanticipated outcomes? When you did try to do X, did you also do Y and Z, which you hadn't thought as part of your logic framework? So here are the topics. They're divided in a bunch of different ways, but I want to show that you prominently on the right-hand side, in line and even before that was in the 2020 health objective, social environment was always a critical part of what we thought we needed to review on behalf of the community guide. But there are other things that are really important here that are not always considered. Mental health, particularly oral health, both of which now have key indicators as part of the 2020 health objectives. And here are just examples of community guide recommended interventions, mass media campaigns to reduce alcohol-impaired driving. They work. Education programs to increase use of child safety seats. Those as well. School-based programs to prevent violent behavior. That's really an intervention that I'll bet that many schools are not aware of. Incentives. We know that worker rewards for participating in smoking cessation programs can increase the cessation rate. And law enforcement. Sobriety checkpoints work, and I won't ask if any of you have ever come across them. Now, as we get into the societal determinants of health, moving upstream in terms of the built environment, again, these are just examples, urban design and land use policies and practices that support physical activity. That makes a difference in terms of level of physical activity. In terms of the social environment, the early childhood home visitation programs. If we want to have a healthy and a high quality of life and high productivity, we need to think about early childhood visitation programs for those at highest risk, vulnerable moms and families. An example of the healthcare system change, provider reminder systems to increase the delivery of preventive services. Provider reminder systems also work. And with smoking, the area that probably has had the most attention, smoking bans and restrictions are successful, as you can see by the large number of people smoking in this room. So this is just gives you an example here. You can see how these are arrayed. You can see when we have the strong evidence versus just general evidence. You can see the range. And it's interesting, I was thinking about the point of decision prompts as I was watching everybody in the convention hall go up the escalator, despite the fact that there was a huge staircase right next to it. So there's places we could benefit. School-based physical education, another example where we don't do nearly enough. I'm not going to go through all these except to say they're all there. And here are some recent recommendations from August 2011. We recommended commercial liability as an effective strategy to reduce alcohol-related problems. And we recommended the use of home-based, multi-trigger, multi-component interventions. Can you repeat that? With an environmental focus for children and adolescents with asthma. And the evidence of effectiveness in improving the overall quality of life and productivity. So we're trying to reduce the number of days missed, school days missed, for kids with asthma. These are just recent examples. Another one in May. We recommended against, and that's rare that we recommend against them, we recommend against the privatization of retail alcohol sales, a hot topic in a number of states, to prevent excess alcohol consumption. And we recommend client or family incentive reward interventions for universally recommended vaccination. But there was insufficient evidence for monetary sanctions for not receiving vaccinations. So that's just an example. I hope it whets your appetite. I hope you all know thecommunityguide.org. That should be, you might want to have that come up every morning for the weather. But that's where you should go, and all this information is there, and the staff, the CDC, has done a superlative job in getting it so that it's very easy to navigate, in addition to all the other wonderful things that we do. I'm going to come back for a reprise, but thank you for now.
Thank you. So we have time for one or two questions to Dr. Fielding about the big picture of what this community guide is about.
They're all experts.
There's a question, yes? So the question was, what's the funding stream to implement the recommendations?
This is not, these are, again, are an independent panel, and they're recommendations of all different types. And they're going to be hundreds of recommendations, already 218 recommendations. So they are not directly linked to any source of funding. The source of funding we've been most concerned about is getting enough money so that, in fact, we could do the reviews and to ramp up so that we could do more of them more quickly and to do updates more often. Some of the interventions here, however, are being used as part of the community transformation grants. So those grants which have gone out and also were used as part of the ARRA funding, the Communities Putting Prevention to Work. So they do relate in that sense to that unfortunately targeted fund. I say unfortunately because there are a lot of folks that are not entirely happy with that fund in Congress, and we need to work very hard to make sure that that fund continues. But at least with community transformation grants, those evidence-based interventions are critical to being successful with respect to those.
One more question, yes?
I'm actually going to talk in my presentation a little bit about what insufficient means,
okay.
But what the task force in the Community Preventive Services Task Force area does is what you saw there. Something will be recommended on the basis of strong evidence, which is like an A, and something that will be recommended on the basis of sufficient evidence. And the difference between them is typically not the magnitude of effect, not that something is better, but just the amount of evidence we have and the consistency of that evidence, the number of things that would make you have extra confidence. So recommended strongly for and against, or for or sufficient for. Same thing in the opposite, recommend strongly against or sufficiently against. And then the insufficient evidence, and I'm going to address that. So
your strong would be sort of the equivalent of an A, your sufficient equivalent of a B, your recommend against like a D.
Yes.
Sort of.
In general, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Pretty close.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Fielding. At the beginning of the meeting, I failed to make two announcements. The first is this session would not be possible without the leadership of Dr. Sonia Hutchinson. Sonia is the Senior Medical Officer in the Office of Minority Health and Health Equity. Big applause. Come on. And Dr. Hutchinson is an active The session is sponsored. You know, you get these announcements when you have sponsors. So I need to say that. It's sponsored by the Science Board. We're very proud of it. And I couldn't be proud that, you know, when you have a baby and you hand that baby off, you want to make sure that baby's in the best hands. I couldn't be prouder to introduce, starting Wednesday, the next chair of the Science Board, Dr. Elizabeth Bancroft. So we've heard about the big picture. The next thing is, how does it really work? What are the nitty-gritties around when something makes it, when a recommendation makes it into the community guide? And we have to share, you have to share that with us, Dr. Worship.
Thank you, Maureen.